This podcast includes frank discussions of mature themes that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. This podcast is intended to provide encouragement and support through personal storytelling. The views expressed are the opinions of the participants and not intended to be medical, legal, clinical, or professional information or advice of any kind.
Welcome to the Bubble Hour.
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 I own it. I did that. Not proud, but that was me. And when I face it, I take back a little dignity. Not looking for excuses. I just want to be free from the power weakness head on me.
Jean McCarthy, and you're listening to The Bubble Hour. Hello, and welcome to The Bubble Hour Archives, a treasure trove of episodes ranging from 2012 to 2022. I'm recovery advocate and author Jean McCarthy. I joined The Bubble Hour as a host in season two. Together with other hosts over the years, Ellie, Lisa, Amanda, and Catherine, we all extend to you our gratitude for listening and a heartfelt wish that this podcast will find a welcome home in your recovery toolkit. The resources mentioned on the show are available at thebubblehour.com, including information on the online support group called the BFB, or Booze Free Brigade, often mentioned on the show. Now, if you're hearing this message, you're listening to one of our free archived episodes, and we'll make sure that there are loads of these available for you to enjoy. These are partial versions of the original recordings, and if you want to hear more, you can listen to full versions and the entire back catalog ad-free by joining us on Patreon. So just head to patreon.com/thebubblehour to learn more. I'll also put a link in the show notes to make it even easier for you to find that. So, all right then, enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. This is Ellie, one of the co-hosts of The Bubble Hour, and welcome to one of our mini-shows, which we'll be doing periodically, where we will read pieces written by women in sobriety or women that are struggling to get sober. Tonight's show will feature five essays about recovery from my blog, One Crafty Mother. You can listen to as many or as few as you want, and then I'll end the show with a poem that I think is perfect as we head into Thanksgiving tomorrow. The holidays can be a tough time for sober people or people struggling to get sober, so tonight's episode is simply meant to provide a distraction for you anytime you need it or want it, and thank you so much for listening. We definitely appreciate it very much. The first piece I'm going to read is called I Can't Feel My Extremities. The thing about drinking, it enables you to manufacture emotions, albeit fleetingly. Because let's be honest here, if wine or scotch or beer didn't have any alcohol in it, would you still reach for it at the end of a stressful or tiring day, just for the great taste? I wonder. The other day, I was watching a PBS show, and they did a piece about oenophiles, definition of which is lovers of wine or ones who study the many aspects of wine. And this man was going on and on about the legs of the wine, the color, the clarity, the nose. And as he was talking and swirling and swirling and swirling this bit of wine in his glass, I'm watching and thinking, just drink it already. You know you want to. Who do you think you're fooling? Maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part. Maybe I just don't want to believe that such a creature exists on the planet, somebody who literally just studies wine, blabbers on about it, swishes it around in his mouth, and then, get this, spits it out. As if. Because I believe that the vast majority of people who drink do so to change how they feel at any given moment. At a party and want to loosen up a bit? Have a drink. Tired after a long day? Have a drink. Relax those muscles. Have an argument with someone or an unusually tough day? Have a drink. Soften the edge a little. Turn the volume down for a bit. I'm talking about what I fondly call normal, ordinary, regular people here. NORPs, if you will. Not problem drinkers or alcoholics. I'm all for drinking to make a good time better, improve a bad day, or unwind a bit. If you're a NORP, I say go for it. Have one on me. Just don't try to sell me that you really just enjoy the taste. I don't think you'd drink it if it didn't transport you away from yourself a little, just for a while. If you don't believe me, have yourself a non-alcoholic beer at the end of a long, hard day. You know, just for the taste. If I sound defensive, it's probably because I'm jealous. I like to get defensive when I'm jealous because it's much more fun to be a little angry than it is to feel inferior in some way. All this rambling brings me to my belated point. The hardest thing to get used to in sobriety for me is all this being present all the time, no matter what business. I don't get to manufacture emotions anymore. Life on life terms. And life, it turns out, isn't all peaks and valleys. See, I like extremes. Give me 10 or give me 0, but please don't give me 5. 5 is so, I don't know, boring. When I'm at 10, the world is my oyster. I can conquer anything. I'm fearless. Nothing could ever possibly go wrong. When I'm at 0, I'm not good enough for the world and nothing matters anyway, so why not just wallow in a good old-fashioned pity party? The infuriating truth is that real life is mostly 5, with the occasional spike to 7 or a drop to 3. Very, very rarely do any of us get to go to 10 or 0. I drank to manufacture a few 10s, to wallow in a few 0s. In my sick thinking, at 10 and 0, at least something was happening. None of this shuffling around between 3 and 7 business for me. The difference between me and a NORP is that I didn't drink to change my 4 to a 5 or to make my 5 a 6. I drank to zoom in my rocket to 10 or cliff dive right down to 0. All rambling aside, though, I'm pleased to report that there is a moral to this story. I should never, ever watch television shows about wine connoisseurs. The next piece is called Behind the Glass. The house is still and quiet. I should be sleeping. In a moment, I'll head up to bed, but I treasure this time alone. I lie on my couch in the semi-dark, and I breathe, sifting through moments from the day and savoring them like sweet treasures. Tonight, though, my mind is tugged to you, to the woman quietly crying, wondering how she ended another day with a glass in her hand, a nearly empty bottle calling to her from the kitchen. You promised yourself tonight would be different. You woke up feeling strong and determined, your softly pounding head thumping a beat to your misery. Not tonight, you swore to yourself. No more. Then 4 o'clock comes around and the kids are edgy and restless. You can't bear to fetch one more snack, answer one more unanswerable question. You are bored, exhausted, and empty. There is homework to be done, dinner to prepare, endless nighttime rituals to perform. The thought of giving the kids a bath without the soothing effects of wine seems preposterous, cruel. Just one, you say. Just something to dull the edges. You want to find that loving place, the one full of warmth and light. You don't drink the glass all the way down before you fill it up, just a little. Then a little more. Then you have one with dinner. When your husband steps out of the room for a bit, you drink one down quickly, but just one. That soft, warm feeling turns prickly. The kids won't go to sleep. Your husband makes a remark that settles on you wrong. Just another sip or two to push back the edginess, only enough to get back to that soft place. You notice the bottle is almost gone. You've done it again. Tomorrow, you tell yourself. Tomorrow will be different. I'm thinking about you tonight because the tomorrows will keep coming and coming. And in their wake, they will leave the shattered remains of broken promises to yourself. Everyone's needs are met but yours. You are left empty-handed, helpless, and scared. You have a secret. You are looking at the world through glass. I know because I've lived there too. You press your nose up against its cool, tear-streaked surface, and you wonder, what is wrong with me? You are dancing on that thin line between keeping it all together and falling apart. The world doesn't know, but you do. You know. You have built a house of cards around the not knowing, but you do. You do know. I don't drink and drive, you tell yourself. I only drink at night. I only drink wine. I'm not the one falling down drunk at a party, not like so-and-so. I need to drink to be creative, to socialize, to be a more patient mother. You look at your life the way the world sees you instead of looking from the inside out. Through their eyes, you look fine. If you look good through their eyes, you must be okay, right? The world can't see the glass, so as long as you keep moving, you can pretend it's not there. You have created the perfect movie set, props artfully arranged to present the perfect picture. And you? You are in the audience at a safe distance, watching your life play out on the screen. I'm thinking of you tonight as I listen to the creaks and groans of my old house and hear my dog's contented sigh as she settles down for the night. The clock ticks softly, the refrigerator hums. I am here, just listening, just being. I am sitting quietly in my cozy home, listening to the echoes of the day. This sounds so small, so insignificant, but it's not small to me. There is no glass, you see. The glass is gone. How do you make it stop? How do you make the endless tomorrow stop coming? That is what you want to know. You make the endless tomorrow stop coming by being in today. It's the only today you've got. You can opt out, disappear behind the glass, or you can feel it, all of it. Listen to those things that you tell yourself. Examine each card in that house you've built. Turn it over, really look at it, and ask yourself, is this about living my life or about hiding from it? After you've been living behind the glass, it's frightening to be on stage with a starring role in your own life. The glare of the spotlight, the endless eyes watching you expectantly, it's all overwhelming. It will make you want to hide. You will feel raw, vulnerable, exposed, uncomfortable, but only for a while. With time, you stop seeing the spotlight, stop wondering what the eyes are thinking. You will feel comfortable just being. It will happen. In order to be free of the glass, though, you have to admit it's there and that it is slowly suffocating you. That's a good place to start. My next piece is called Shadow Dancing. I'm pacing back and forth at the end of my driveway. My 7-year-old son, Finn, is late. He's on his first bus ride ever, and my heart is caught in my throat. After 30 minutes of edgy waiting in the rain, the bus company finally calls. "We have him," they say. "There was a mix-up at the school. He was supposed to be on bus number 1, but they put him on bus number 2. Hang tight. He's almost home. I keep my voice light as he skips down the bus stairs. "You okay, buddy?" He gives me a puzzled look. "Sure. I wasn't scared. We drove by the house once, and I saw you standing there. I told them, 'Look, there's my mom.' And so they knew where to go." I give him a squeeze, smiling with pride, and we head into the house for a snack. I take a moment to check email, and by the time I get into the kitchen, Finn is standing on a stool, the ingredients for a sandwich spread out in front of him. He's spreading jelly onto a piece of bread with a plastic knife, and his tongue sticks out in concentration. He catches me staring and gives me a grin. "Look, I can do it all by myself, Mama," he says. I tell him I can't believe how grown up he is, the same thing I've said to him countless times in the past few days as we prepare for the first day of school. But this time the words trigger a distant, unwanted memory, and the power of it stops me dead in my tracks. It's a memory of my daughter, Greta, when she was 5 years old. She stands on her tiptoes, reaching for a bag of chips on a high shelf in our pantry. I'm sitting at the kitchen table watching her, swirling my glass full of red wine. I'm glowering, nursing a morose, dull feeling, a mixture of rage and boredom. It's 6 p.m. and I have no plans for dinner. A good mother wouldn't let her have a snack this late, I think, but I make no move to stop her. I'm on my second glass of wine, or is it my third? The warm glow of the first glass feels long gone, replaced by this sour dullness. I'm lost in self-pity, thinking about how long the days are, how I don't want to fix another dinner. I just want to disappear. She reaches the chips and breaks into a smile. "Look, Mama, I can do it all by myself." I give her a half smile and take another sip of wine. She stares at the wine glass a moment, looking uncertain. "Aren't you proud of me, Mama?" "Sure," I grunt and get up to refill my glass. As she slumps away, I'm thinking a nasty little thought. Jeez, the kid can't even get a bag of chips without needing validation. I realize what has been dogging me these days. Finn is the age now that Greta was when I got sober. He is hitting all these big milestones with his observant, loving, present mom right by his side. The shadows that follow me are the ringing memories of the past, of how it was for Greta to spend her first 5 years with a drinking mother. The guilt wells up, crushing me. I can barely breathe. Oh, Greta, I am so sorry. The floodgates open and oily black memories flow into my head, images of Greta poking my inert form under the covers, asking to play, her crestfallen face saying, Mama, you're always tired. Getting up again and again while we play a board game. Mommy will be right back. To sneak sips from a stashed bottle of wine, reading her a bedtime story with booze on my breath. I leave Finn at the kitchen table munching on his sandwich and go lie down in my darkened bedroom. I let the shame and guilt wash over me. Let the memories come. After 5 minutes or so, I take a deep breath and push the memories back into the shadows. I can't let guilt take the wheel. I lived so long with guilt as a drinking mom. As a sober mom, I can't afford to lose myself in the past. I can't change what has happened. And if I let the guilt win out, it will lead me back to a drink. Guilt is, at its root, a selfish emotion. It can make a painful situation all about me, how I feel, how hard it is for me. And it's not about me anymore. It's about being a present mom, one who lives her amends to her children as best she can, here and now. I'm a different mother now, but not in the ways I expected when I got sober. In sobriety, I have learned that I'm more impatient than I realize, more anxious, too. I'm capable of rage that is more potent than anything I ever felt when I was drinking. When I was still drinking and dreaming of sobriety, I saw myself as an apple-cheeked, effervescent mother, smiling serenely through the long days, wallowing in my kids. That is not how it turned out. I do feel more joy, serenity, and peace of mind. But the tough emotions, anger, boredom, irritation, resentment, they are also much pointier now that I'm not hiding from them, going around the tough stuff by numbing out. I'm more snappish now than I was when I was drinking, more quick to reprimand or lose it over something small like spilled juice or sibling rivalry. The difference, though, is I don't feel guilt like I used to. I don't have that nagging voice in my head that whispers, you're like this because you drink. When I forget appointments, lose homework, show up late, or overreact and yell at the kids, I know it's because I'm human. I can own my part in things, apologize if necessary, and move on. Drinking made me so self-centered, I was constantly awash in guilt. My disease liked it that way. The guilt drove me right back to the bottle again and again. As a sober woman, I refuse to let the shame own me anymore. I take a deep breath and walk back into the kitchen. Finn is finishing the last of his sandwich with a sticky purple grin. Let's go wait for Sissy's bus, okay? I say. And the last of the guilt scuttles away into the shadows.
Do you ever wish for a little bit of recovery inspiration on the go? Tiny Bubbles is a new podcast that brings you the best bits of the Bubble Hour podcast in quick little episodes, just 15 minutes long, but packed with wisdom, insight, and encouragement to live your life wholeheartedly and alcohol-free. Look for Tiny Bubbles wherever you get podcasts and subscribe today. Tiny Bubbles. Little bits of recovery goodness brought to you by the Bubble Hour. Sometimes all you need is a little pep talk so you can get back to living that beautiful life you're building. Take Good Care is a new collection of recovery readings inspired by the Bubble Hour. If you love the encouragement and support you find here on this podcast, then this new book is for you. Visit thebubblehour.com for more information or check the show notes for a link to purchase. You'll find Take Good Care on Amazon worldwide. Take Good Care, recovery reading inspired by the Bubble Hour, the perfect gift for yourself and friends. Help others find the message of recovery we champion on the Bubble Hour. Plus, get access to the entire backlist ad-free by joining us on Patreon. Patron support helps with the ongoing expense of making free versions of the show available, as well as the cost to make new content like our spin-off podcast, Tiny Bubbles. Become a Bubble Hour patron today at patreon.com/thebubblehour and help us help others through stories of strength and hope.
The next piece is called Life of the Party, and it was written just after Labor Day weekend, I think 2 years ago. There's a question I'm asked every now and then from people who want to know what it's like not drinking at parties. Is it hard for you? They want to know. The answer, finally, is no. It wasn't always this way. This summer, my third sober summer, is the first time I can honestly say that not drinking wasn't hard most of the time. During the first couple of years of sobriety, I would get a pit in my stomach every June. As I anticipated summer, I felt a kind of sadness as I thought about barbecues, summer evenings, and parties without the pleasant lubrication of alcohol. Each new experience, my first trip to the beach house, watching the sunset while munching on hot dogs and hamburgers, I felt the loss of alcohol like I would a dearly departed loved one. It was like grief, in a way, the ache I felt in my bones that I couldn't have just a couple of drinks like normal people. At parties, I would stare at people drinking, fixate on them as they raised their wine glass to their lips. I was jealous of them. It was like watching an ex-boyfriend dance with another woman at a party. Even though I knew the ex-boyfriend was bad for me, and I was mostly glad to be rid of him, it still hurt to see. I monitored everyone's drinking. Look at her. She's walking away from a half-full glass of wine. Or, I think that that's his fourth drink. Maybe he has a problem. Getting ready to go out for the evening was particularly difficult. I didn't realize how important having a couple glasses of wine as I put on makeup and fixed my hair were to me until I could no longer have them. Walking into a party stone-cold sober felt completely alien. How would I carry on a conversation? Laugh? Meet new people? I felt like everyone was staring at me as I sipped my club soda with lemon, thinking, poor thing, she can't drink. We had a busy Labor Day weekend. We went to two parties, one with friends from town and another with old friends we hadn't seen in a while. It didn't occur to me until the weekend had passed that the old jealousy was gone. As I dashed around to get ready for the party on Saturday night, slipping into my new little black dress and putting makeup on, all I thought about was how fun it would be to reconnect with friends and have an evening out with my husband. I almost forgot to be grateful. But later in the evening on Saturday, I felt the atmosphere of the party shift, and I remembered, oh yeah, I'm not drinking. I could practically set my watch to it this shift, and it happens around 10:30 every time. Conversations get louder and less interesting. People start repeating themselves, get a little slurry, a little sloppy, and I know it's my cue to leave. It's the time of night when, before, I would have crossed that line between social drinking and having too many. I never wanted to leave parties when I was drinking. I always stayed until the hostess went to bed or the bar flicked the lights on and off, signaling that the bar was closing. I got home around 11 p.m., paid the sitter, and went out onto my back porch to breathe the cool night air. I sent up a prayer of thanks, of gratitude, that I was free of the need to drink in order to have a good time. I said thank you for my friends, for the amazing people I'm getting to know in town. When I was drinking, I would have been so fixated on having more to drink that I would cut conversations off in order to go to the bar. I would hover near the alcohol all night, and the next day I wouldn't remember the names of people I had met or what we had talked about. I would have a pit in my stomach wondering, did I make a fool of myself? Could people tell I had too many? I drifted off to sleep that night with a contented smile on my face. I woke up the next morning, refreshed and hangover-free, and had a wonderful day with my kids. I wasn't short with them because I had a headache or because I slept that itchy sleep too much alcohol brings. There are difficult moments, of course, but they pass. Because all I have to do is remember all the gifts I have received in sobriety. I can be present in my life all the time. Drinking felt like a prison. I could never let go or be myself because my mind was constantly tugged toward the need for more. Now I am free. And the last piece I'm going to read before I end with a poem, It's called Snapshots from Before, Back into Life, and this is part of a series that I write in the first person, and it is my description of what my life was like in early sobriety. And this post is dedicated to all the people struggling in those first few days, weeks, and months of sobriety. And this particular piece is about my first day home after my 30 days at a rehab facility. We pull into the driveway, my little family and I. The kids are chattering on about all I've missed. Finn is almost 2, and his burgeoning vocabulary makes me misty-eyed. I've only been away 30 days at an inpatient rehab, and yet he seems like a different kid. I don't want to get out of the car. But as my husband unloads the bags, Greta, who was 5, tugs at my arm. Come in, Mama. I have so much to show you. The dog goes nuts as I walk in the door, wiggling, barking, and wagging her tail madly. You wouldn't be so happy to see me if you knew what an awful person I am, I think. Finn holds shyly onto my hand as Greta prattles away. I try to listen, but it's all too much. I gaze around my living room and kitchen and wonder, how the hell am I going to do this? Over there is the cupboard where I stashed my wine. Over there is the recycling bin, the source of so much angst and worry that the piling up bottles would be counted, causing almost daily trips to the dump. I see the wine glasses, which used to hang on the wooden rack near our fridge, are gone. In their place are coffee cups. It makes my heart break into a million pieces with sadness. Then gratitude. My husband has done his best to clear out all vestiges of his alcoholic wife. But I know he can't clear out the inside of me where she rages on, still. It's not like I can just avoid bars, I think. My house was my bar. I drank in secret in my kitchen or with stolen sneaky glasses from hidden stashes. I have to learn to live sober, smack dab, in the middle of ground zero where I did my drinking. Although I am 31 days sober, I was at a rehab for the first 30, so this feels like day one. Day one around all the things that triggered my drinking in the first place. Number one on the list is the crippling shame and guilt, and I feel it coming over me in waves so strong I want to curl up in a ball on the floor. Instead, I plaster on a smile for Greta and Finn and let her lead me around the house, pointing out just about everything. And this is my favorite blanket, but you probably remember that, right? She asks, looking at me hopefully. Of course I do, sweetie, I say, bending down to kiss her forehead. Because before, sometimes you forgot stuff, she says, without a hint of anger in her voice, which somehow makes it worse. I feel the knife of guilt twist deep in my gut. The tendrils of temptation tickle my ankle, start to slide seductively up my leg. A drink would make the guilt go away, my disease whispers. Just wait a while, and say you want to go to the grocery store. Then you can buy one bottle, just in case. You don't even have to drink it. You've been down that road so many times, and look where it got you, Ellie, says a new voice. My recovery voice. I've only just found her. Every now and then, before, she'd peep up with a weak protest. This is no way to live. But my disease voice always won. This time, she sounds stronger, more determined. This surprises me because I feel weak, ashamed, and on the verge of crumbling. There is something else new, though, something deep in my gut. A certainty. The knowledge that I'm an alcoholic and that if I have one drink, I don't control what comes next. My counselors at the rehab called it surrender. I cling to this knowledge like a drowning woman. The anxiety I feel is almost crippling. I was told it would get worse before it got better, that I just had to learn how to feel the bad stuff and get through it without a drink for a while, and then my brain and body would remember how to get through the tougher emotions without my bottle-shaped anesthesia. My husband slides his arm around my shoulders, the first contact we've had since he picked me up. Our marriage is held together by the thinnest of filaments, based on our love for our kids and what we remember of our marriage before. I want so badly to be the woman I was before, the one who always liked to drink, but who could stop after a few, albeit usually a few more than everyone else. That woman was fun. She didn't have anxiety. She could go for days without a drink, even though she was really, really, really looking forward to the weekend. Why couldn't I have stayed her? It's like when you see a photograph of yourself and you notice the fine lines and wrinkles that weren't there before. The image on the paper doesn't match up with the image of yourself in your head. It happens so gradually, this process of becoming an alcoholic. It It snuck up on me. I wish I had been paying more attention. Maybe if you pay attention now, you can drink like a normal person, my diseased voice says. I sigh, but then I realize there is a sly grin on my face because I have come to expect diseased voice's antics now that I have surrendered. Yeah, right, says recovery voice, because that worked out so well for you the last 400 times. I'm getting better, I realize. If I can just stay away from one drink for one day, for 1 hour. To get better, all I have to do is not do something. I ask my husband to drive me to a recovery meeting that night because I don't trust myself to drive to the meeting and not to the liquor store. He smiles, knowing what a milestone that is for me. I've learned I'm going to have to feel worse before I feel better. Having to ask for a ride because I can't trust my own brain doesn't feel like progress, but I know deep in my heart how much courage that takes. It takes so much more courage than falling into a drink. I want to be brave, even though I don't know if I want to be sober, because I don't know who that woman in the picture is yet. I know I want to be brave. Greta shuffles into the room carrying a board game, Chutes and Ladders. I have never played this game with her sober before. Board games are a trigger, I realize, as I plunk down to play, a knot in my stomach. But then I look at her smiling face as she says, Mama, you go first. And I think, be brave. I roll the dice and land on a ladder. A good sign. And to close, I'm just going to read a poem called Be Thankful. I thought it was a perfect thing for now as we go into Thanksgiving tomorrow, and the author is unknown. Be thankful that you don't already have everything you desire. If you did, what would there be to look forward to? Be thankful when you don't know something, for it gives you the opportunity to learn. Be thankful for your limitations, because they give you opportunities for improvement. Be thankful for the difficult times. During those times, you grow. Be thankful for each new challenge, because it will build your strength and character. Be thankful for your mistakes. They will teach you valuable lessons. Be thankful when you're tired and weary, because it means you've made a difference. It's easy to be thankful for the good things. A life of rich fulfillment comes to those who are also thankful for the setbacks. Gratitude can turn a negative into a positive. Find a way to be thankful for your troubles, and they can become your blessings. I hope every one of you has a happy, healthy, and hopefully sober Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for listening. I did that, not proud, but that was me. And when I face it, I take back a little dignity. Not looking for excuses. I just want to be free from the power. Weakness head on me. In a dark corner is where shame likes to hide. Oh, you think you're strong just cause you keep it all inside. It just stays and wait there to rob you of your pride. Turn the light on, turn the light on. You can shine when you see. I take back a little dignity. I'm not looking for excuses. I just want to be free from power. Oh, yes, head on me. You don't have to shout it out on Main Street to be clear. You don't need to whisper to confession every year. The person you should talk to is looking at you in the mirror. And the one who matters most can always hear. When you say I'm old, different, not proud, but that was me. And when I face it, I take back a little dignity. I'm not looking for excuses, I just want to be free.